Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Today is May 21st, 2016. I'm Matt, your host, and we're here live, KTAM 1400. If you want to give us a call here at the studio, it's 254-773-1400. And ladies and gentlemen, it seems like a month since I've been behind the mic, but it's only been a week. And in that week, a lot has happened, and I see things, and I come up with opinions. And I was just thinking about this, and once again, my opinion piece for this week is I've entitled it, "Everyone is Good at Something." You've heard this before. Everyone is good at something. Or how about this one? Jack of all trades. Two common phrases to express that a person is good at what they do. Of course, in time, mistakes are made, but the mistakes are corrected and the person moves on. For example, a baker makes beautiful, delicious pastries, but once in a while, a batch doesn't come out right because it was left in the oven too long, or the baking tray wasn't buttered well, or the oven was set on too high. So what does the baker do? He throws it out and starts from scratch. Easy, right? Well, what about the carpenter building or repairing homes? A true craftsman, but sometimes the measurements are wrong, or the wood is cut wrong, or a nail bends when hammering it in. So what does the carpenter do? He pulls the nail, remeasures and cuts a new piece of wood, and continues to build or repair the house. Well, what about the person who carries a weapon for protection? On the range, when the person is shooting, if they miss the bullseye, they study their stance, grip, and trigger control, and try to hit the bullseye again. Or what if there's a malfunction? The weapon is cleared of the malfunction and studied to try and find out why the gun malfunctioned in the first place. The shooter, when at the range, is in a controlled, relaxed environment and will get all the problems solved before they leave the range. But what if they're not? What if they're not in a controlled, relaxed environment? What if the situation they're in is uncontrolled and chaotic or deadly? Well, that changes everything, doesn't it? You see, when the baker, carpenter, or relaxed shooter have a problem, they correct it without real worry of repercussion. When the shooter who is in a life or death situation pulls their gun, there is no room for error. There is no, oh, let me try that again, or oh, I wasn't ready, or oh, that's not fair. If you're a person carrying a weapon for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. And I don't mean you're good at it, I mean you're great at it. Everyone is good at something, but defensive shooters must be great at this something. So what is great for a defensive shooter? Knowing your weapon inside and out, being able to clear malfunctions and hitting your target within a 6-inch circle upon demand and on the move. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not baking cakes and we're not building houses. We're defending ourselves or others with force. There is no room for error. You must practice, practice, practice. Give us a call, aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the website, aaronsgunshop.com. Take a look at all the courses that we have available, license to carry classes, seminars, and sign up for one of those. Give us a call. We'll set you up, square you away. Okay. Everybody, let me tell you what I'm going to go over here a little bit. Got a few segments I want to talk to you about. Today's license to carry segment will cover penal codes 931 and 932, and that will be self-defense and deadly force in defense of person. The penal codes are very important to know, especially if you're a licensed to carry holder, a person who carries a gun. So be sure to take some notes on this one. As always, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's American Rifleman's column, The Armed Citizen, to see what we can glean from these true stories and how we can apply it to our lives. And I'm going to read to you today's product spotlight, which will be on the Citadel 1911 Tactical 9mm. Again, the owner of Arch Coons of ANC Firearms has allowed me to talk about this nice piece, and he's got it on the shelf. If you want to see what I'm talking about, just go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, and see a picture of the handgun. It's very nice. When I'm talking about it, you can look at it as I describe it. And a whole bunch more. We're going to have a whole bunch more going on. So we're going to start right now with the license to carry segment. Our last license to carry segment covered force to protect property and deadly force to protect property. Now this segment is going to cover penal codes 931, self-defense, and penal code 932, deadly force in defense of person. These are sometimes referred to as castle law. Now, in the times we live in now, it has become more apparent and more likely that you and I at some point may be aggressed upon. And since that's the case, it will be very important to know our rights under the law. Now, I'm going to read them to you, but you got to remember, listening for 5 minutes comes nowhere as close to truly understanding the details of the law. You may think you're right when you defended yourself, but the state will make the final determination. It would be very smart indeed for both of us and the state's interpretation of Penal Codes 931 and 932 to be the same. I would hate to see a good person who failed to understand their rights be prosecuted and convicted for the sole reason they didn't know the laws for self-defense well enough. Ladies and gentlemen, the state does not care about you. They may say they do, but when it comes right down to it, when you're in the courtroom, the state does not want to lose. Prepare, study, and train now for an event that we all hope will never come to pass. And with that, I'm going to read to you out of my little workbook here, Penal Codes 931 and 932. Penal Code 931 is self-defense, so get your pens and paper ready. Texas Penal Code 9.31, self-defense, sometimes referred to as the castle law. Paragraph A, except as provided in subchapter B, a person is justified in using force against another when and to the degree he reasonably believes the force is immediately necessary to protect himself against the other's use or attempted use of unlawful force. A person's belief that the force is immediately necessary as described by this subsection is presumed to be reasonable if the actor 1. Knew or had reason to believe that the person against whom the force or deadly force was used unlawfully and with force entered or attempted to enter the actor's home, vehicle, or place of business or employment, unlawfully and with force removed or attempted to remove the actor from the home, vehicle, or place of business or employment, or was committing or attempting to commit aggravated kidnapping, murder, sexual assault, aggravated sexual assault, robbery, and aggravated robbery. 2. Did not provoke the person against whom the force or deadly force was used. 3. Was not otherwise engaged in certain criminal activity at the time the force or deadly force was used. That was number 3. Now, the actor who has, this is important, listen up. The actor who has a right to be present at the location where the force or deadly force is used, who has not provoked the person against whom the force is used, who is not engaged in criminal activity at that time, is not required to retreat before using deadly force. I'm going to come back to that after I read this section. B. The use of force against another is not justified, 1. In the response to verbal provocation alone, 2. To resist arrest or search that the actor knows is being made by a peace officer or by a person acting in a peace officer's presence and at his direction, even though the arrest or search is unlawful unless the resistance is justified under subsection C, 3. If the actor consented to the exact force used or attempted by the other, 4. If the actor provoked the other's use or attempted use of unlawful force unless A. The actor abandons the encounter or clearly communicates to the other his intent to do so, reasonably believing he cannot safely abandon the encounter, and B. The other nevertheless continues or attempts to use unlawful force against the actor, or 5. If the actor sought an explanation from or discussion with the other person concerning the actor's differences with the other person while the actor was A. carrying a weapon in violation of section 4602, B. possessing or transporting a weapon in violation of section 4605, and C. Listen up to this one. Get your video cameras ready. The use of force to resist an arrest or search is justified, 1. If before the actor offers any resistance, the peace officer or person acting at his direction uses or attempts to use greater force than necessary to make the arrest and search or search, and 2. When and to the degree the actor reasonably believes the force immediately necessary to protect himself against the peace officer or other person's use of attempted use of greater force than necessary, and D. The use of deadly force is not justified under the subchapter except as provided in sections 932, 933, and 934. Now, let's go back up to the page here. Well, first of all, on the resisting arrest search, you better have your video cameras ready, and you better make sure you're about to die. Otherwise, you're going to get swarmed. But if you go back up here to where it says it's not required to retreat, I want to give you an example here. Ladies and gentlemen, if somebody breaks into your house at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you confront them in the living room, and you deem it necessary to use deadly force, and you fire your weapon, and the person now is laying on the floor, dead, bleeding out, the police are going to come, aren't they? Yes, they are. The police are going to ask you questions, aren't they? Yes, they are. Do you think you'll most likely be able to sleep in your room that night, your bedroom that night, or maybe even get a hotel room that night? The odds are pretty good because the guy's in your living room at 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, what if you're outside on a street corner and something just goes wrong and you have to use deadly force, and now the guy is bleeding out in the gutter and there's 12 people all around you, all with a different vantage point, all saying something a little bit different, that when the police come and are asked questions, they're all going to give a little bit different answers. Do you think you'll go home that night? The odds are a lot less that you will, because you're going to have a lot of answering of questions to do, most likely. I can't guarantee it, but my point is, even though you're allowed to stand your ground, sometimes being right is not always profitable. If you've got to stand your ground, somehow we screwed up, didn't we? If you have the opportunity to run, run away. Do whatever you can to get out of that situation. It's better to run if you can than to hold your ground. All right, let me move over to Penal Code 932, deadly force in defense of person. A person is justified in using deadly force against another if he was justified in using force against the other in Section 931. Now, you need to know your force levels, too. We've got videos on this. Listen to my podcast. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the radio page. Pull up the podcast of the previous shows going over the force levels. I've actually got videos here on the KTEM YouTube channel. You can check it out. But it's important to know those so we know what we're talking about here. A, to protect himself against the other's use of attempted use of unlawful deadly force, or B, to prevent the other's imminent commission of aggravated kidnapping, murder, sexual assault, aggravated sexual assault, robbery, or aggravated robbery. B, the actor's belief under subsection A2 that the deadly force was immediately necessary as described by the subdivision is presumed to be reasonable if the actor 1 knew or had reason to believe that the person against whom the force or deadly force was used unlawfully with force entered or attempted to enter the actor's home, vehicle, or place of business or employment, unlawfully and with force removed or attempted to remove the actor from the home, vehicle, or place of business or employment, or was committing or attempting to commit aggravated kidnapping, murder, sexual assault, aggravated sexual assault, robbery, or aggravated robbery. 2, did not provoke the person against whom the force or deadly force was used. And 3, was not otherwise engaged in certain criminal activity at the time the force or deadly force was used. The actor who has the right to be present at that location where the force or deadly force is used, who has not provoked the person against whom the force is used, and who is not engaged in criminal activity at the time, once again, is not required to retreat before using force or deadly force. My advice would be retreat. Run away. Go away. Get out of the situation. Okay? Now, ladies and gentlemen, that was approximately 7 minutes worth of reading. Okay? You remember it? You got it? You all know it? When you walk out on the street, you're going to know this. You're going to know what your rights are. You cannot learn in 5 minutes what I read to you over the radio here. You've got to learn this stuff. You've got to have it in your bloodstream. You've got to know what you can do and what you can't do. Because the last thing you want to do is make a decision based on false realities and then get yourself screwed in court because you did something wrong. So you need to know what you're doing. Study this stuff. Go to a person who knows what they're talking about. Go to a license to carry class. If it's not me, go to somebody who knows what they're doing. Okay? Don't get yourself in a bad situation. All right, let's move on to our NRA section. In this section, I'm going to read to you 3 stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman. And hopefully from these 2 stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do. And maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. It depends on the stories. Now, if you're not a member of the NRA, you might consider becoming one. The more gun supporters they have, the more muscle they have to stop bad legislation. Okay. I think I've got 4 stories today. Excuse me. This is coming out of February 2000. Kodak, Tennessee convenience store owner Don Durbin had closed up shop one night and was preparing to get into his van at the back of the store when he heard someone running toward him across the gravel. When the man reached Durbin, he brandished a handgun and demanded that the proprietor hand over his cash box. Durbin also was armed, feigned a compliance, but after turning back to face the would-be robber, he used the box to push him away. A struggle ensued in which Durbin gained the upper hand, shooting his assailant, who, it was later learned, had a 38-page criminal record. My commentary. Number 1, this is a great example of why situational awareness is so important, especially if you're carrying a lot of money or valuables. Fortunately, Mr. Durbin won that attack. So you want to pay attention to your surroundings because things can happen very quickly. Story number 2. An 18-year-old who allegedly kicked in the door of Lori Boykin's Auburn, Alabama home one afternoon in a robbery attempt couldn't have known his shenanigans would prove an enormous pain in the rear. Boykin's response to the threat on her safety came in the form of a single well-placed shot to the intruder's buttocks. Police later nabbed the suspect at a nearby medical center after he apparently hightailed it away from the scene by hitching a ride with a passing motorist. My commentary. I'm trying to picture this. Did the robber break in butt first? Did the robber see Lori's gun and try to run away and then he shot him in the butt? Does Lori have a butt fetish? I don't know. I don't know the answer to these questions, but I do know that Lori and her gun saved the day. Story number three. This one's funny. Seeking a suspect in a botched pawn shop holdup, Huntsville, Alabama police didn't have to look far before finding the man's vehicle. It was parked in front of the store with his daily to-do list inside that incredibly included the penciled-in reminder to rob the pawn shop. The man had allegedly entered the store, asked owner John Dempsey to show him some stereo equipment, and then Dempsey turned away, stabbed him with a knife. Then Dempsey pulled his .32 caliber handgun, and after chasing his assailant, who stopped long enough to inflict additional stab wounds, fired a shot that found its mark. Police later apprehended the man and charged him with robbery and attempted murder. I thought that was funny. Writes a to-do list to rob a store. I mean, you know, the guy is either very detail-oriented or he's just not too swift. Okay, let's go to the bonus story. This is from February 2000. A wary deer hunter took the precaution of placing his .357 Magnum handgun within easy reach before bedding down in his truck camper one night at a farm outside Frankfort, Missouri. Soon afterward, he woke to find John Diamungre, I can't pronounce his name, we'll just say John, and escorted him at gunpoint to the nearby farmhouse where his friend dialed 911. The capture ended a manhunt that had involved scores of police, citizens, bloodhounds, and helicopters. The convict serving a 20-year sentence for robbery had escaped while being transported from court on other charges. And my commentary to that is, it's funny. You never really know what kind of animal you're going to catch when you go hunting. In this case, it was an escaped convict. And the moral of the story is always be aware and be prepared of your surroundings and area there. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to go over the Citadel 1911 9mm tactical handgun. Awesome gun. Arch Kuntz at ANC Firearms has got one on the shelf now. It's beautiful. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page. Take a look at the picture. And when we come back, we'll be talking all about it. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is May 21st, 2016, and we're here now on talking about our product spotlight It's the Citadel 9mm 1911 handgun. Arch Kuntz, very good friend of mine, owns ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. He's got a neat little shop there. He's got all sorts of goodies. And the thing that's big with me and him, or I look at him, is this. And I mentioned this to him just the other day. He somehow gets the stuff that everybody wants one way or another. He may not get a whole bunch of them, but you know, you got one of these guns that you want to get and it's just so hard to find, like a Kel-Tec or something. Somehow he's like a bloodhound. He just hunts it down, finds it, and he can get it. Well, today we're going to be talking about the Citadel 9mm 1911 tactical handgun. And this is a beauty. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, and you'll see a picture of it there. And while you're there, like us on Facebook. Let's get the numbers up. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read to you a short, chopped up report off the web here from Bob Campbell talking about this gun. He gives us some good ratings. He broke it down. And I'm just going to explain it to you. And what you need to do is either call up Arch at 254-983-4417 or one of the guys there, Dennis, Clint, Mike. They'll help you out. They'll let you know if it's still on the shelf, unless somebody's bought it already from the last show I was doing. Speaking of which, everybody, you know, Saturdays at 10 o'clock on 105.1 FM, The Ranch, I do my other show. So if you want to get double of me at 10 o'clock, go there at 105.1 FM and check it out. But anyway, back to the Citadel 9mm 1911 handgun. This is Bob Campbell speaking. I think we all agree that the 1911 handgun is among the most recognized and combat effective handguns of all time. We also agree the 1911 is not for everyone, and I would agree with that statement. One reason some shy away from the 1911 is the perceived recoil of the 45 ACP cartridge. No doubt about it, the 45 demands practice and acclimation to master. The occasional shooter will have a difficult time dealing with the 45. I do not mean that derisively. Time is precious, and many simply cannot devote the time to mastering the handgun, which makes the 9mm cartridge attractive. Excuse me. While the 45 ACP is the natural first choice in the 1911, you are missing something if you do not consider the 9mm 1911 platform. The 9mm 1911 has all the good traits of the 1911, including low bore access that limits muzzle flip, a well-shaped grip that fits most hands well, and straight to the rear trigger compression. That's what I like the most about it, is the trigger is so easy. Among the more affordable 1911 handguns that has some desirable features is the Citadel. The Citadel features good sights, an ambidextrous safety, a beaver tail grip safety with a memory pad, good fit and finish for the price, and checkered wood grips. The fit of the Novak sights particularly impressed me. Each is properly dovetailed in place, and the rear sight is adjustable for wind. The cocking serrations are well executed, and a matte blue finish appears to be bead blasted. Now, the 9mm cartridge offers significantly less recoil than the 45 ACP, allowing shooters who are unable to practice as often to master it more quickly and maintain a reasonable level of proficiency. In the end, the 9mm is what it is, and the shooter's skill is important. The 9mm is a useful cartridge with light recoil and good accuracy that promotes practice. The Citadel's 1911 is chambered for the most popular service pistol cartridge in the world. Now, the Citadel is all steel. The weight penalty is not severe since it weighs just a little over 32 ounces. That means the recoil is less than practically any other 9mm in its size. Now, firing the pistol, I fired the pistol with many variety of loads. Prior to the shooter's log view, it fired some 400 rounds without a single failure to feed, chamber, fire, or eject, no break-in malfunctions, and no problems. The 8-round magazine gives the pistol a 9-round capacity, and for those who practice, that should prove adequate supply. I have enjoyed firing and using the pistol, and that is why it has more than 500 rounds on it, as he finishes this report. Now, the Citadel 9mm pistol is easy to use well. Recoil is not a consideration. It weighs a little more than 32 ounces. The steel frame absorbs momentum. The low bore axis limits muzzle flip. Trigger compression is a controllable 5 pounds. The pistol came out of the holster smoothly and lined up on target quickly. That has to do with the shooter. First shot hits were obtained quickly, firing a man-sized targets from 5, 7, 10 yards. Rapid follow-up shots were accurate. When practicing speed loads, the magazine release was tight, maintaining good contact with the magazine, and easily manipulated to quickly drop the empty magazine. The slide lock functioned properly, and the Novak sights offer an excellent sight picture. It's a hot little pistol, ladies and gentlemen. It really is. The Citadel is both reliable and accurate and should serve well for personal defense. And it's well worth your time and effort to investigate it. So what you need to do, ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking, this is a great gun for women. I get a lot of ladies come into the shop trying to shoot their guns, and they can't handle it, and they get frustrated. And I put my 9mm 1911 in their hands, and every time it's a 180-degree turnaround. They're tearing up the target. They're loving the way it handles. It's just a great form-fitting. In my honest opinion, it all has to do with that trigger. The trigger is a 3 to 5 pound trigger break. It's smooth and it's straight back. It's not like one of the arch type of triggers. So a 1911 trigger is excellent. The thinness or low profile, like you had mentioned, is great. So go to ANC Firearms. He's in Heidenhammer. Give him a call, 254-983-4417. See if they still got it left on the shelf. If they don't, they've got others, and they can order you what you need. But check it out, and I'm sure you will not be dissatisfied. So, and like I said, go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, and you can take a look at the picture and to see what I'm talking about. Say Citadel written right on the side of it. You can't miss it and mistake it for anything else. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we got all sorts of good things coming your way. So we'll see you on the other side. What I want to do in this pep section is bring onto the screen here and introduce to you my son, Dylan Beatros. Dylan, come on over here to the mic, buddy. Say hi to everybody. Hey, say hi in French. My son is going to Southwestern University, and he's learning languages. And what is it? French is the major one, right?
It is, yeah.
Tell me something in French.
Okay. Bonjour, tout le passant. Je suis très content d'être ici.
And what did you just say?
I said hello, everyone. It's nice to be here.
Well, great. I'm sure everybody's saying hello to you back. Dylan, the reason I got you on here today... Dylan is an actor. He's also got his IMDb page. If you want to go there, Dylan Beatros, check him out. He's doing quite nicely. Maybe he'll even send you a signed autographed photo. I don't know. But the reason I've got him on here today is because Dylan is my acting crackhead when it comes to our training seminars. Okay, he's not a crackhead, everybody. He acts as though he's a crackhead. And what it is, when we do our room-to-room search in our shoot house, the scenario is basically that the parent or parents are asleep in the master bedroom and somebody breaks in, which happens to be my son crackhead here acting as like a crackhead trying to steal a TV so he can buy more drugs. And so the people of the household wake up, they hear it, and they're going to room search because they got children on the other side of the house and they got to protect their children. And in the course of this, Dylan's been doing this for quite a long time. He has come to realize there's... people have patterns, a natural set patterns of doing things that are not good. And so we're going to get him on here now and talk to him, and I'm going to ask him some questions. So Dylan, first, as my crackhead in my seminars, tell me just an overall, what do you think of the program, and then we'll get into the details.
Well, first of all, I really love the program just because you can talk about home invasion in theory, but as soon as you get out there, every concept that you thought you were going to follow just goes right through the window. Like, you are a completely different person than how you were talking about yourself inside the classroom. Like, I've had people that were super confident, and then they get into the seminar, and they're just a mess. They're heavy breathing, they're stomping, they're like, you know, it's all self-confidence just flies out the window when their adrenaline is pumping. So.
Yeah, he makes a comment there, and I teach this all the time, and that is, you know, you're shooting at a piece of paper, the worst thing that can happen to you is get a paper cut. But when you're put under stress, that adrenaline's pumping through your system, are you going to be able to manipulate your 10 fingers? Because they end up having to turn into like 3 fingers. And so trying to manipulate a gun with 3 fingers as compared to 10 fingers makes it a little bit difficult. So Dylan, you've done this a bunch of times. I've taught tons of students, and you're absolutely right. We see the same scenario in the classroom. You know, they've got it. They're a little nervous, but they think they got it. But once they get into the shoot house, and ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. We're using airsoft guns, replicas of real guns that shoot plastic BBs at a high enough velocity where it's not going to penetrate you, but it's going to like, oh, that's smarts. So when you're turning the corner, you're going to think twice before you do it because you don't want to get stung by this thing. But Dylan, what have you learned? You wrote a list here for me. I'm going to take it one by one. But as you're going through the house and the adrenaline's pumping, there's things that everybody seems to be doing that gives themselves away. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, so the first one is definitely shadows. I know, I like to say I'm hiding in one of the back rooms and someone's trying to cut a corner. Well, the the simulation house that we use has a bunch of windows, so light's constantly coming through the windows and it's illuminating the area. And let's say a person's trying to cut a corner, and then there's this hulking shadow that's preceding them. And so I have three choices. I can either leave, wait for them to turn around, spray them with bullets, or I can just shoot them straight through the wall. And so it really gives them away. A lot of people are not conscious of the way, like, what's on the ground or what else they're doing. The involuntary things that they're doing that gives them away.
Shadows is a big one. It really is. Now, if you're thinking it's nighttime out and there's no shadows, that's not true. You got maybe the coffee brewer's on and you got that little green LED light, or you got some other type of LED lights, or you got the hallway light that's down there in the socket that's illuminating your walkway. There's shadows that can be cast, so you got to watch for those too. Okay. What about, you got down here, heavy breathing. Tell us about the heavy breathing.
Oh, my gosh. So, this one, I'll give a specific scenario. This one lady was doing extremely, extremely well. Like, she was tiptoeing really quietly. I couldn't hear her. And then all of a sudden, hear this. Well, okay, there she is. So she was coming down the hallway, so I just maneuvered around. And while she was hyperventilating, I just came out and popped her. So it really gives you away, just your breathing. People aren't conscious of the fact that...
Well, let's talk about that. When you're going through it, I know when I'm going through it, mm-hmm. I've got to watch my breathing because I know that can be a giveaway. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, when you're controlling your breathing in a hyper situation, your body's craving more oxygen. And so you're trying to stall the oxygen because you don't want the gasping to take effect. And all of a sudden it gets to the point where I got to breathe, man. I got to breathe. And then that moment is when you get snagged. So you've got to learn to control your breathing and be as calm as you can. Very good. Your next one on the list here is stomping.
Some people, it seems like when they come into the shootout house, it's like they have lead shoes. They will just slam their feet down on the ground, and it literally is like sonar. I know exactly where you are the entire time. And it makes it really easy for me. So if you want the crackhead in your house to have a really easy time, take all your stuff and shoot you, stomp your feet. I know some people were actually smart. They took off their shoes, and that way, like, when they were in their socks, I couldn't hear them. But those that had, like, some people had boots on, some people had sneakers on, and they would just stomp around, so I knew exactly where they were every step of the way.
And the shoot house also, it's not 100% replicated like a real house where it's got carpeting, wood floors. There's dirt in there. It's on a concrete floor. And so when they're turning corners or moving, you can actually hear the gritness mm-hmm. between their foot and the floor, right?
Yeah.
So you have to, when you first walk in there and you realize, hey, that my feet are making noise, now you got to start walking flat foot, not bending your feet. So that's another thing that's taking away oxygen from your body. It's great, though, because you want to get shot. Rubbing their pants legs together.
This is honestly essentially like the stomping. Like, let's say, you know how when you wear jeans and you're like, your legs are really close together and it makes that sound when the material runs together?
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't conscious of that because, like, you know, like, let's say you're going hunting and, like, one of the big things to keep in mind when you're hunting is to keep your legs further apart. That way your pants legs aren't rubbing together and not making a lot of noise. That's kind of how it is in the shootout house. I hear a lot of people that I'll just hear this jean friction sound and I know exactly where they are. It's just like the stomping. It's like sonar.
Dylan has become like a ninja. I mean, he's just very quick, light on his feet, and because he knows these patterns, he just takes people out real fast, which is a great thing because we're always trying to find your weak spot and enhance the areas that you're weak at. Okay, this one's very important, as they all are, but I say that because I actually teach this in the class, and that is how to turn corners. There's proper ways to turn a corner in a house if you think that there's somebody in there so you don't get compromised. So tell us about poorly cutting corners.
One of the things you're supposed to do when you're cutting corners is to keep as close enough to the wall, if I'm not mistaken. And that way you're a smaller target and you can't be hit. I know a lot of people, when they cut their corners, some people will stick their hand out with their gun, kind of like clear the area, and they'll fire off a round or something. Or some people would like stick a foot out first and then like clear the corner like they were glued to the wall.
Let me clarify what he's saying when he stick close to the wall. If you're going down a hallway and you're going to turn to the right, I don't want to stay on the right wall. I want to stay far away from that wall and stay closer to the left wall. I want to stay as far away from the turning corner as possible, like he's saying, because if I'm hugging the wall turning the corner, there's no room for error. They're going to see immediately me turning that corner. But if I'm at a distance from where I turn and closer to the far wall, I will probably see them first before they see me. That's called cutting the pie. But we'll talk about that in the seminar on December 13th, and you can come to. So Dylan, if they're turning the corner and they got their hat on and they're real close to that wall, that you can see the brim of their hat or their foot or the barrel. And if somebody like the bad guy like you, if you wanted to, and we don't allow this, but you could if you wanted to, as the gun barrel's coming out, you grab the barrel and take the gun away from somebody, right?
I could, yeah.
Okay. Opening, closing doors loudly. I mean, that's just an obvious one. I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, like, there's not that many doors in the shootout house, but they find a way to just slam them every single time. Like, some people, when they will enter the house, instead of, like, opening the door, they'll kick it open. I guess theatrics. I guess they just want to have fun.
They see it on TV, too.
I mean, you do you, but I just know that I know exactly where you are. And I know when you're entering, I know when you're leaving, and, like, some doors creak really loudly. So if you're not careful with what you're opening and what you're doing, I'll know which entry point you're at, and I can find you.
That's right. This one here bothers me. This really does. Because I train to keep your finger off the trigger. I train to... I get guns that replicate real guns. Let's say we got an airsoft gun that's a Glock 17. I will only put 17 pellets in the gun. If I've got a 1911, I'll only put 7 pellets in the gun. It replicate, because the mechanical workings of the gun is the same, so you can interchange mags. But the last one you have here is firing off a round when entering each room.
Yep, that happens.
I mean, think about that, ladies and gentlemen. You're in a subdivision firing a round into each room before you enter it.
I'll give one instance. This person, were doing three of the other ones. Like, they were really breathing heavily. They were stomping. Their pants were rubbing together. So I knew where they are to begin with. But every time that they would cut a room, they'd fire off a round. Every single time. So, like, let's say that bullet goes through the wall, hits your kid or your dog on the other side. It flies through your house and into your neighbor's house and hits your neighbor in the leg or something. It's just, not only do I know where you are, you're going to be out of bullets by the time I get to you. Like, that actually happened. This person had completely run out of ammunition, and so I was pretty much chasing them around, like, the hunt, in a sense. Like,
now, tell me something. You know that pellet, how it feels.
Ow.
Okay? And you know when you're turning the corner, even if you're the aggressor and you're turning the corner, you know there's a chance if the person outdoes me, he's going to shoot me. So doesn't it make you think twice before you turn that corner and make you think of all the training that you've got so that you can engage that turn with much more professionalism than just going out there and putting your neck in a noose?
Absolutely. Like, the concept of danger makes everything real. Like, if there's no possibility of me getting hurt, I won't care, because there's no threat to me. But, like, I've been hitting by those suckers in the throat, and that hurts. And so I know that I don't want to get hit by one of those things. So
let me make something clear, too, ladies and gentlemen. You're all wearing protective gear. This is just every now and then, because he's in there all the time, and he's getting shot at by 15 people at a time sometimes. Sooner or later, one sneaks in a weak spot. But you, when you're in the shoot house, you're all protected up. You feel the impact, but you don't feel the sting. So it's a good deal. But if you really want to learn and see how you do under stress, this is the place to go and the training to take. It's aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the High Cap Adventure page. You'll see the flyers there. December 13th is the last seminar for this year. So you might want to call up, sign up, whatever, but it's going to fill up quick. So give us a call if you want. Now, Dylan, do you have any parting words before we take a break?
But my main thing is, like, in the class, we go through all of these techniques. My dad will teach, like, all the do's and don'ts before entering that shootout house. The problem is, when the adrenaline is pumping, a lot of people throw those things out the window. The most important part of it is to stay calm and remember everything you've been taught. That way you can perform adequately.
And the way you perform that even better is by practice, 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 right? Mm-hmm. You got to continue it up. The better you are prepared, the more that training will come to save you when a situation really happens. So, Dylan, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing. I'm sure a lot of people got a lot out of that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get right to it here because I don't want to waste any time. I have an extremely special guest here today. I'm going to call him John. And you'll be able to see this video later on, Monday or Tuesday or so, and you'll notice something interesting as you see John here. I brought him on because I want you to listen to somebody with true experience when it comes to being in a life or death situation. Now, John, first of all, welcome to the program. Why don't you say hi to everybody?
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it very much.
It's a pleasure. And ladies and gentlemen, this is not a joke. This is not hype. This is not a joke. We're doing this for a specific reason. I'll tell you what, John, I had a information sheet on you, and I screwed up I either lost it or misplaced it. So what I'm going to do is put it back on you. Tell me why you're dressed the way you are. And this is not a joke, everybody. This is serious. I know this individual. I know what's going on. But I want you, John, to tell everybody you're in this studio right now. We're going to go over a whole bunch of things. But why are you dressed the way you are?
Well, real briefly, Matt, it's because after 30 years in the military and operating as a contractor overseas in several countries around the world, the enemy forces, there's organizations in countries, including America, where contractors and the American veteran are actually under target now. Just recently in Washington, D.C., a highly decorated Marine was just kicked down to the ground out at a McDonald's.
I remember that story, yes.
There's been other teammates of mine that have received death threats. And I'm not really concerned about it myself. I said, bring it on. But when it involves my family, I'm incognito today, more or less to protect them.
Okay, tell me, let's get a history of you to the best of your ability so that people have an idea why, what experience you have, why are you on the radio talking about this stuff. Give me a basic background without giving anything away that gives your history and experience.
Well, during my 30 years in the military, I spent the last 20 years in special operations. I'm not going to name which branch because I don't play the contest game between SEALs, Green Berets, Rangers, and Rambos. But I've operated direct action missions, counter-narcotics, close air support. I've done several close contact missions in Philippines, Afghanistan, Central Africa, Western Africa, Iraq, several other places that people don't really know about. And each time, at the last minute or at the strangest minute, I've actually become engaged. Or during my training of other indigenous forces, I've been engaged. And so through the years, luckily I'm here today, but I have got the experience you're looking for when it comes to close contact and inside shooting scenarios.
Okay, so with that background in history, ladies and gentlemen, this is a great opportunity for me to ask questions and for you to hear how it is for real. Not being in a classroom with somebody who just got their certificate to train somebody, but somebody who's been there, done that, know what it's like, and has done it multiple times. And I'm always talking about common threads. John here is going to talk about common threads that happen all the time in situations that are live under duress, life or death situations. So, John, let's do this, because we're only going to get you on here for a short block of time. I got a list of things here that I want to talk about, or we have talked about, but I'll throw it out there, and then you can just talk upon it, expand upon it, okay? One of those common threads that is a necessary thing to do is situational awareness. Can you talk about that?
Well, as an operator, we are trained for several years on how to spot the obvious, constantly scanning for avenues of a threat, for avenues of egress, like your exits at gas stations, at restaurants, wherever, things like that. And basically it's just being situationally aware that if something is wrong, or if it looks wrong, smells wrong, feels wrong, it probably is wrong, the hair on your neck starts standing up and you say, okay, what's my next step? Am I going to run, or am I going to move towards the enemy and close the gap,
and
get off the edge?
And you're telling this and you're giving this because of your experience that the common threads show when you see certain things lining up. The hair, your spider senses start tingling. It's just one of those things. This has happened before. I've seen it before. This is how you respond to it, right?
Yeah, it's all about that instinct. If something feels wrong, something's wrong, and you need to pay close attention to what's around you.
I've always told people this. Paranoid is when you don't know. We're not paranoid. We are situational awareness because we know there's a threat. Would you not concur with that statement?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay, very good. Let's go to something else here. Let's talk, because I talk about this in my classes too, and man, it happens every time, and if you don't know it happens, you're going to get screwed. If you do know how it happens, you know how to correct it. Tunnel vision.
Well, tunnel vision is another symptom of almost like shock. When you get engaged, your body isn't used to that. It's not a natural feeling, and so your body starts going into a sense of shock, and tunnel vision is just one, where you're focused on what's in front of you. You're focused on the threat. And as operators, we're trying to actually do your peripheral scanning. But it takes a second. You have to control your breathing, because when you go into shock, you go into shallow, rapid breathing. You the blood starts going to your body. Your fingertips start tingling. I kind of get excited about this. I've never been on the radio before. But, yeah, the tunnel vision
It's almost like it just blackens out on the sides, and you're just so focused on the threat. You're like, okay, I'm in tunnel vision mode. I got to snap out of it. Because don't you agree that bad guys come in packs?
Oh, absolutely. And because just like a magician, he's attracting all your attention here, but you don't see what's around on your side. So when we're doing vehicle operations, you got guys 360, two guys facing back out of the vehicles, two guys on the sides. Everybody's scanning. And when one guy takes one threat, then the other guys are scanning, looking forward, and anticipating the next one. So when we're doing combat shooting or in a real-world scenario, we don't waste a lot of time with that first target that goes down because we're looking for the second one already. That's right. We have to make sure that that first one goes down and stays down. You mentioned earlier about a failure to stop drill where the guy got shot three times, but he was still coming.
Right.
When we train, we don't train to shoot paper. We train to actually take that guy down. So we do sometimes a double tap or a triple tap to eliminate the threat and move on. That's an acquired thing. And if you're a weapons owner, it's your responsibility to continuously train so you can actually beat that tunnel vision. You can beat that breathing. Your hearing. A lot of times, your buddy can be right next to you, but under fire, you can't hear him. All you hear is the loud popping. You're concentrating on your target, but you can't even hear your buddy saying, hey, he's out of ammo. He needs to be covered. You should automatically feel that, but that comes again with training.
You said something just a second ago that kind of bleeds into this next one. Explain to me the pros and cons of this. Rapid respiration. I'm assuming the rapid respiration is because you need the oxygen, but how can that counter in a negative way?
Well, in a negative way, you could hyperventilate yourself and go down. And so you've got to control your breathing. No matter what you're doing, you've got to take that breath and then get your head back in the game. And it doesn't matter how many firefights a guy's been in or how many scare tabs he has on his shoulder. Everybody is afraid when they go into a gunfight, but you have to control that. You have to control your breathing, your hearing, your pulse rate, because if you get dizzy and you go down, now you've become a liability to everybody around you, including your wife or your family in a house situation.
Now, John, you are familiar with my facilities. You know my shoot house, and you know the special training I do in my shoot house. One of the biggest I knew you were there was because people were gasping for air. Because you want to go through, first of all, when you go in there, you know, I want to be quiet, but then you got to control that breathing. Because if you don't control the breathing properly, you start to hold too much, and then you got to start gasping for air. And once you start gasping for air, you start rapid respiration, panting for air. And one, you're giving up your situation, and two, basically what you just said there. So, ladies and gentlemen, we do that type of training. We're talking to John here. He's just giving you a life scenario that rapid respiration, hyperventilating, and all this kind of stuff can be detrimental to you. So it would behoove you to get in a situation where you can maximize that potential training. So take one of our courses.
Matt, you're talking about your shoot house, and I love your shoot house because when you turn that corner, you have thrown in there so many different scenarios that there's no time to actually analyze what's going on. Some people will turn that corner and they'll be exposed to a certain situation that they pause for like 1 or 2 seconds to figure out what they're going to do. And that's what gets them killed every time at your shoot house. So you have to practice. You have to get in the mindset and mentally rehearse every scenario around you throughout the day. What would I do in this case? So when that happens, you're not going to pause for 2 to 3 seconds. You're going to instinctively know right from wrong, take the shot or not. If you're not going to take the shot, get back behind cover and defuse the scenario. But that's mindset, and that's...
I want to talk about mindset. I have a whole opening segment of my programs on mindset. You're the master of mindset because you're living it, okay? Talk to me more, talk to the listener more about mindset and how absolutely critical it is to mission success.
Well, I believe most people are carrying a weapon for their own protection and their family's protection. It's not just an accessory that you wear because you think it looks cool. When you strap that gun on, a whole buttload of responsibility goes along with that. You have to be the very best you can be. If you go to a doctor, you don't want him to pull out a rusty tool and say, I can just do this or do that. he's constantly training, and in his mind he's going over, okay, this is what I need to do. So if you're going to be carrying a weapon and you're going into a grocery store, take a second and think, okay, if something goes down, how am I going to employ this weapon? I've got the mindset that I'm carrying it, so I need the mindset that I'm going to use it. And if I use it, somebody's going to be killed, and it's not going to be me or my family. So that goes to lining up your shots. If you have to engage someone, you want to make sure that there's no innocent bystanders behind him. And if you're going to do something, you're assuming that responsibility that he might be shooting towards you. So you also have to make sure that your background is clear, so your teammate, your family, no one else gets hit by your actions.
Don't you have about 5 minutes to decide all this?
5 minutes? No. No, you've got about maybe 3 seconds just to line up and maneuver into the good position to where you can take a shot.
So what you're telling me, John, is this. If a situation goes down at a 7-Eleven and I'm packing heat and I want to do defense of a third person, I've got to analyze the situation, see where the threat is, determine the perception of the threat on how serious it is, locations of people, exits, all this kind of stuff, my ability, my capability to shoot the gun, my mindset with that ability, the adrenaline factor, all these different things going into play, and I've got to do that in how many seconds?
Probably less than three.
Three, wow. That's not much time, is it?
You touched on a good one, the threat level. And because you don't want to be a Johnny wannabe Rambo and pull your weapon out just because you've got one. You have to analyze the threat level and actually see if you're going to make things worse or better by engaging your weapon. So, you're engaging the target by employing the weapon.
Tell me about the reaction. We're kind of talking about this now, but really, more specific. Reaction and response time under fire. Not before the fire, under fire. You're being shot. What goes on, man? I've had bullets go past my head, okay? And it's a very eerie feeling. You, my friend, have maximized that situation. Tell us about it.
Well, there's so many more guys out there with more experience and more stories
than
I do.
There will always be.
Absolutely, right now, and I respect them for that. But the first time I was engaged, I pissed my pants, and I had that tunnel vision. I really didn't know what was going on until my squad leader slapped me in the head and said, hey, let's get in the fight. Let's go. And then over the years, it's to the point where, okay, that's the target, and my weapon's already out, and 3 rounds are in the target. So it all depends. But you have to have that training and the mindset that you're actually going to engage.
Weapon familiarization? Is that important?
Oh, weapon familiarization. And your round-robin class is excellent about that. There's been a lot of times in Afghanistan and Iraq where perhaps we have to secure weapons from the targets that are down on the ground. We secure that weapon and we take it, or we'll engage with that weapon because it's already in our hand. You got to know these weapons. And because of your training and the common thread that you refer to, mm-hmm. every weapon has its common denominator. And I'm not going to go into details about that.
Well, since you brought it up, let's talk about that. That's an important fact. We've got a couple minutes here. Common thread meaning... each gun has its own little bells and whistles. Those bells and whistles on different guns all do the same thing, but they may be designed or placed different. So instead of looking for each individual bell or whistle, if we can find how those things work in general and bypass the looking for each thing and get to the gun and find its little common thread, it gets us up in the game. So instead of studying every gun, we can study the common threads of guns so that if we pick up any gun, it's up and running.
And the weapons operation, absolutely.
Yes, okay. All right, there was one other thing here you had mentioned. Talk about rehearsals.
Okay, rehearsals.
Rehearsals and cold sweats. Okay. Cold sweats.
Well, when you get in a gunfight, again, that's part of the shock value. It's not a natural thing, so you're reacting to it. Your body reacts to it subconsciously, and yeah, you're going to start getting those cold sweats. But you can move past that through proper breathing. Your circulation system and everything starts acting normal again. But you have to have the right mindset and attitude to overcome that, and that comes from rehearsal, mental rehearsal, and visualization. if you know you're going on a long trip, you need to rehearse things with your wife or the other people in your car, because they need to know what you're doing in case of a situation. My wife, she's incredible, because she understands and she supports that things go wrong. If I'm at a traffic stop, there's a car in front of me, and I've gotten a gentleman walking close to me, I see he has a weapon, I want her safely out of the way, so she already knows the crash position to recline her seat and curl over on her left-hand side. Now she's out of the target area, and she knows that I'm going to come up, weapon on chest, I'm ready to pull the target. If I can, I'm going to escape and avoid the whole scenario. But if not, then I'm going to take the target and I'm going to move.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world is not the same place it used to be 10 years ago. Things have gotten worse. It's coming to your front door, your hometown, your neighborhood. If you're not prepared, you're foolish.
Hey, Matt, talking about rehearsal, I'm sorry to interrupt your train of thought.
Yes, sir.
But that's just the car. You've got to rehearse movements and actions inside your house, because that's where a lot of the things take place. So find your safe house, find your safe spot. Know that your wife might be calling 911 while you're engaging the target.
The number to 911 is 911, in case you don't know. All right,
yeah,
John, look, I've got to wrap this up real quick because you've got another special guest coming on. But in anything in the last 30 seconds you want to recap, go over, make comment of, anything like that?
Well, very basically, if you're going to carry that weapon, you have to have the mindset to use it responsibly. Responsibly. Keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to take down the target. That's it.
Arch Kuntz, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. I've known him for years now. He's got a great shop there in Heidenhammer. And we just work well together. We've got a good friendship. He comes and shoots at my place. I go to his place and look for things. I pick up things sometimes that I can't find very easy, and I know he's got them, and I just pick it up there. Well, he's had a Kel-Tec PMR-30 that I was looking for, and they're awesome guns. And he's got two on the shelf right now. Call him up at 254-983-4417 and see if he still got them on there, because I was talking about it on the other show. They might have been gone by now, but they're a good price, fantastic gun for survival, home defense, and especially for ladies too, because the recoil is not that much, and the effect of that cartridge is pretty damaging. And some people say, what's a 22 mag? Well, I know people have been shot and their intestines have been blown out, and it does an incredible amount of damage. So let me read to you here from the American Rifleman. When was this? 2011, the Kel-Tec PMR-30, and it's by Gil Horman. The PMR-30 is a full-size polymer frame semi-automatic pistol chambered in 22 mag. If the chambering seems unusual, so does the magazine's 30-round capacity. A careful distribution of polymer and aluminum around key steel components has reduced the pistol's weight to a feathery 13.6 ounces when unloaded. A fully loaded magazine will only add 6 more ounces to the total weight. The pistol has a narrow profile overall. The front-to-back distance in the grip is a bit longer than usual in order to accommodate the 22 mag cartridges. The full-length grip also has a subtle pie-wedged shape narrowing at the front under the trigger guard. The overall effect is a grip that is quite comfortable to work with, even for shooters with smaller hands. The PMR-30 has an ambidextrous safety that is easy to reach and operate. The slide arrives from the factory fitted with two bright, two-colored fiber optic sights and is drilled and tapped to accommodate a scope base. The frame has an integrated Picatinny accessory rail to allow shooters to attach various lights and laser lights sights. Kel-Tec chose to follow a more European model for the magazine release by placing it at the heel of the grip rather than up by the trigger guard. They also designed the magazines to stay in the grip until they are manually removed. These design choices are indicative of the pistol's... Excuse me. Hold on one second. I lost my place here. Of the intended use as a field and trail gun. Being able to quickly bump and dump a pistol's magazine using a thumb release is quite convenient on the range or during shooting competitions. It's not so helpful when the same bump and thumb release dumps your magazine into the bushes during a 3-day hike, never to be seen again. Been there, done that. But even if you're not a fan of heel release, Kel-Tec approached the design of the PMR-30 in a unique way. Often a heel release is a metallic tab that rests under the grip against the base of the magazine. It has to be pressed backward to the shooting hand with the tip of the finger or thumb, which can be a bit awkward to do. The PMR-30 release is a rounded, cutout located in the heel of the frame. It's pressed forward toward the pistol's muzzle to release the magazine. It only requires a moderate amount of pressure to release the magazine with the tip of your thumb. Now, the lightweight makes it easy to hold at arm's length for an extended period of time, and the recoil is mild. The 22 mag produces more noise and flash than a 22 long rifle, but it's far from unpleasant. Though popular as a rifle and revolver round, few gun makers have attempted to build a semi-automatic pistol in 22 mag because the case length, the case rim, and variations in pressure levels of different brands of 22 Magnum ammunition are all features of the round that have caused reliability issues in the past. The pie wedge shape of the magazine solves the problems of the cartridge rims and allows the ammunition to double stack and feed correctly. Now, this is important. The hybrid action blending features from the blowback and lock breech systems successfully navigates the shifting pressure of different ammunition brands. Now, this pistol is designed with foot travel in mind, and several features of the PMR-30 make it ideal for outdoor exercise. The pistol is the same shape as most duty-sized pistols, so it has to be taken into consideration if the pistol is going to be used for legal concealed carry or open carry. I used both inside the waistband and belt holsters to carry the PMR-30, and I found that the holsters designed for the size 9mm and 40 Smith & Wesson pistols work nicely. And just under 20 ounces fully loaded, the pistol is a pleasure to carry on long walks. I can confirm that, too. Most modern backpacks and utility bags have several pockets or pouches to fit a variety of gear. It was easy to find a place in my pack for the PMR-30, a spare magazine, and a 50-round box of ammunition. And best of all, the change in the pack weight went unnoticed. The PMR-30 can also serve as an excellent self-defense option for those who are looking for low-recoil defensive handgun. It does take practice and a bit more time to change the magazines, but with the 30 plus round capacity, frequent reloads don't seem to be much of a concern, and the reduced recoil and less expensive ammunition encourages regular practice. Now, the manufacturer is Kel-Tec. It's a 22 Magnum. It's a semi-auto hybrid blowback lock breech system. It's made of 70-75 aluminum covered by a glass reinforced nylon, has a 4.3 inch length barrel, 1/16 inch right hand twist in the barrel. The rifling. The magazine is a 30 plus one round capacity, fiber optic sights. The trigger pull is a nice 3 pound, 6 ounce snap there. Overall length is 7.9 inches, and the weight is 13.6 ounces. Width is only 1.3 inches, and the height is 5.8 inches. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching, we're going to have a video clip of this. This is the PMR 30. This is an awesome little gun right here. It's got the European mag release that we talked about, and we pull it out of the gun like so. It's got the ambidextrous safeties, it's got the fiber optic sights, and it's got the accessory rail, which I've attached my light to, and you can see that right there. What's really great about it is the trigger brake. I was expecting this to have a terrible trigger based on the way it looked, but it's smooth and clean. And with the 22 mag caliber, there's really no recoil. Its accuracy is incredible. I can put them in the same hole. And for a woman to utilize this gun, she has 30 rounds of defense, no major recoil, extremely accurate gun, and she's got a powerhouse. It's also great for survival. Have yourself a few extra rounds. You can have up like, say you have four magazines, about 120 rounds of ammo on a pistol that shoots great. You can see with optics. You can even put a red dot or a scope because it's got room for mounting scope mounts and such. Excellent gun. The price is right. They used to be like $700-$800. ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, 983-4417. Give them a call now. I think you may have still two left if they didn't sell already. And check it out. I think you're going to like it a lot. So the PMR-30, Kel-Tec PMR-30. Go to ANC Firearms. Check it out now. Okay. And today we're going to be talking about the Glock 27 Gen 4 and 40 Smith & Wesson and the Advantage Arms 22 conversion kit that will work on it. So let's start with the Glock 27. This is one of Arch's guns. Arch is a Glock dealer. He's got the whole spectrum of Glocks. And if he doesn't have it in the store because they go out the door real fast, he can. And I want to talk to you about tactical flashlights, not the flashlight itself, but the different types of on-off switches that the tactical flashlights have. And we've got about four. There's different types of switches, but the basic ones are the slide switch, the push button switch, the toggle switch, and the squeeze pad switch. And since I've got video running right now, as I read these off again, let me show you what they are. Here's a tactical light, but it's got the slide bar that turns it on and off. You push it from the left to the right, from the right to the left. Then you have the push button switch. You got the long flashlight here with the push button in the back. You push the button and nothing happens because the battery's dead. Okay, but you push the button and it works. Then you have the toggle switch. The toggle switch, you turn up and down like a seesaw. One way is a permanent on, the other way is a temporary or strobe light on. And then we have the squeeze pad switch. Basically, if you got the light on your handgun or rifle, it's got a wire coming out with a squeeze pad that you can squeeze it when you want to use it. So those are basically the different types of on-off switch. Now, in my humble opinion, some tactical lights should not be put on some types of guns, while other tactical lights should not be put on others. And here's why. Pistol light rails are under the slide of the gun. If you're looking in the video again, I've got my simulator Glock 17 here, and this light rail is right underneath the barrel. Okay? A slide switch tactical light is okay, except for one aspect of its design. When laying the handgun down, there's a good chance that the slide switch may be touched and turn the light on by accident and kill your batteries without you even knowing it. And when it comes time to use it, in case of emergency, well, you have no light. So if you look at this flashlight here with the on-off switch being the slide switch, and if I put the gun down on its side, it may bump that switch into the on position, and then your battery dies and you don't even know it. So although this is a very bright light for a very good cost, its only flaw would be its on-off switch, which is a slide bar switch. A push button that is on the back of a light won't work for a pistol either, since the trigger guard of the pistol gets in the way. So if I try to push the put button here, there's no way for me to get my finger to the push button to turn it on. So that's not going to work for that. A toggle switch, however, is perfect for a handgun. If you'll notice, I'm putting the toggle switch flashlight on the simulator. And when I'm holding the weapon, I can manipulate my fingers to turn the light on and turn it off, enable me to have a free hand. So the toggle switch is perfect for a handgun. Since your fingers are very close to the switch, you can easily manipulate the light, touching the toggles with the that stick out on either end. You can turn the light on temporarily by tapping the toggle or turn it on completely by tapping the toggle switch the other direction. Now, a toggle switch on a tactical light being used for a rifle is not good because the toggle switch can be accidentally bumped when you don't want it to be bumped and give away your position. So if I'm holding my weapon and my tactical light's up here for me to manipulate, but it has no protective covering over the switch, and I hit a tree limb or something, it may bump the light on when I don't want it to be on. So a butterfly switch light for a rifle, in my opinion, is not good. A slide switch on a rifle has the same problem as the handgun. It can be accidentally turned on. So the best light for a rifle, in my opinion, is the push button switch or the squeeze pad switch. They both give quick access to the turning on of the light, but you can maintain full control as to when the light goes on. Now, all this I've said is not written on the packaging of any tactical light. This is all learned by trial and error. As much money as I spent on lights, I can tell you there has been lots of errors. So before you waste your money and buy on the wrong tactical light, be sure to check out this video on the website and go to aaronsgunshop.com. And remember, you got the slide on and off switch. You've got the button switch, you've got the toggle switch, and then you've got the squeeze pad switch. So take a look at it. This is a very brief video, but at least it gets you started. So if you like one over the other, you can go study it via YouTube, Google it, whatever, and you can start learning what might be best for your particular weapon. So that's it for the product demo. Moving on to the gun training demo. And since we have the flashlights here, I wanted to show you a little trick on how to use a flashlight. I drew a diagram for you, too, because that's the kind of guy I am. I'm always giving. You can see in the video here, I'm showing a picture of a handgun with a tactical light attached to the bottom of the light rail. And in my drawing, I have a dotted line coming out of the barrel. The dotted line out of the barrel where the X is the direction or the flight path of the bullet as it comes out of the barrel. When the light is on, you know how when there's the light on, you can see the cone of light as it goes down range? Well, the yellow highlighter here represents the cone of light. The orange line with the ball at the end represents that bright beam in the center of that cone of light. Now, if you study this and know this, you'll realize that the center beam, the brightest part of the beam, the center, will be directly under your bullet flight path. So let's give an example here. I've got my gun here with the flashlight on it.
You're welcome to turn off the light.
Well, Paul's telling me to turn off the light. Let's try that out. Paul, thank you very much. Can we see this? Oh, there we go. Okay, let's get it on camera. There we go. I've got the light on. If you look in the video, everybody, you're going to notice that the outer perimeter is not as bright as the interior perimeter of the cone of light. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this on permanent. You'll notice the center part is brighter. So when I go to shoot the gun, you can't even see, it's too bright. The laser is hitting right about here. And that's going to be just about an inch above where the center cone is. So here's the illustration. If you're in your house or something, or outside in the street, and you've got a gun with a flashlight on it, the most common comment is, well, won't they know where you are if you got your flashlight on? Well, yeah, they're going to know your basic area. But there's different ways and different techniques. One's like moving the flashlight all the time, and that's like a gun's in one hand, a flashlight's in the other, but it occupies one of your hands. So that's why I don't really like having a gun and a flashlight. I want the flashlight on the gun. Or you can hold the gun away from you or get a little bit of cover. But if you can see the threat and you're behind some type of barricade and you can put the gun around the corner, and we'll illustrate it here with this microphone while you're looking on the video. I'm on this side being protected, but I can still see the threat. I don't want the threat to know where I am exactly. He has a general idea, but what I'm doing is I'm bringing the gun to the other side of the barricade, and I know that the bullet impact is going to be right about center of where the brightest part of the beam is. So if I project that bright beam onto the threat, when I see the brightest part of the beam on him, I know that if I go to pull the trigger, that bullet path is going to line up about either dead center or about an inch or two above the center beam of the flashlight. So what's happening is I can be out here and take the shot and be totally undercover, and he may return fire at something that a light, and I'm not even there. So that's a great little trick to know about how the flashlight works on your handgun. Once again, let me show the picture, the illustration. The bullet flight path comes out of the barrel and goes down to the target. When the tactical light is turned on, it causes a cone of light. And in the center of the cone, it will be the brightest beam, and that goes to the center of the cone of light. The brightest part of the beam is directly underneath where the bullet path will impact. Okay? So if you know where the bullet path is and the light beam is, you know you just put it on the target, and you should have a good hit while staying undercover. Doing the best you can with the money you have, you want to get the best pistol your money can buy. There are many factors to know before buying a handgun that a clerk may not know. It is imperative to go to someone who can personally help you to select the gun that's right for you. Now, there's things you need to know before you buy a handgun. And if you come to my shop and I'm giving you training, if you look on the screen, you're going to see this card. This card has all the questions you need to know and answer to get yourself the perfect gun for you. What they are this. Action types. What kind of action do you want? You need to take my class to learn some actions. Trigger resets, vital. Weight of the gun, depending on who you are. Single or double stack. Size of the gun, depending on its purpose. Size of your palms, length of your fingers. Your ability to work the slide. What caliber do you want? You want a large caliber, small caliber, what? Sights. So many different types of sights to pick from. Do you want an idiot gun, or do you want one with safeties? Idiot gun means you just pick it up, pull the trigger. And 12, most importantly, what's your attitude about handling the handgun? Now that we mentioned the things you need to know, I'm going to show to you now on video how to hold a handgun once you find the one that's right for you. When it comes to self-defense shooting, I can't emphasize how important the proper grip is. The grip is so important that, in my opinion, it surpasses the importance of the front sight. The front sight is extremely important, but in fast shooting, the proper grip is what makes the difference between success and failure. So what I'm going to do now is, if you're looking on the screen, I've got my faithful little laser pistol here. Replicates a Glock 17. If you look here and you can follow me via words, the back end of the gun with the curved part whereabouts you hold it is called a beaver tail. Between your index finger and your thumb is the web of your hand, and those two shall become one. You're going to ride your web of your hand all the way up to the top of the gun just underneath that beaver tail and get it as close as you can. and you're going to line the gun in the center of your palm. Now, if you're looking at the video, if the gun is crooked in your hand, that's a no-go. You want the gun straight in your palm, lined up with your elbow to make a straight line. Your finger will be extended. Keep it off the trigger. Do not put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to shoot. The other three fingers wrap around the grip. In the video, you're going to notice on the other side of the gun, I'm holding the gun with my strong hand, but on the other side, we have an open area. I call that the puzzle piece that's missing. The piece of the puzzle that's missing is on your offhand, and that's on the thumb. It looks like a chicken leg. Comes down here, and it's big down the bottom. That part of your thumb is going to fill in that empty spot. The thumb is going to line up with your trigger finger, and the dominant thumb of your dominant hand will rest directly on top of your submissive hand. And all fingers, if you can look at the screen, are facing forward towards the muzzle. Can you hear me? Forward towards the muzzle. We don't want crisscrossing. We don't want fingers out. We don't want fingers up. We want the fingers facing forward. The part of the palm and the offhand goes here on the opposite side of the gun. The other four fingers of the offhand wrap around and cause a lock. And then you push out with the palms of your hand, and it locks the gun into place. And this way, with the gun being straight in your hand and the threat in my 12 o'clock position, that's right in front of me. I'm looking at the threat, and there's an invisible line of sight. My eyes are looking at the threat. The gun being straight in my hand just comes directly into my line of sight, and then I pull the trigger. And you see the laser on the screen? That's it. I'm aiming at my head, and I'm shooting my head right there. Okay? If you go like this with the gun and have it crooked in your hand, and I'm looking at you, and I bring it into my line of sight, and that laser's not even on the screen now. That's why it is so vitally important to have proper grip. I shoot the fastest and the most accurate in a self-defense mode with a gun that has no sights, because if you have sights, you're going to default to the sight, you're going to look for the sight, and you're going to study the sight, and instead of that, you're going to start anticipating the shot. Without sights on the gun, that's why I say sights are secondary to the proper grip for self-defense. When you come up to a self-defense situation, focus on the threat, the gun is proper in your hand, it comes into your line of sight, and boom, 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 you take the shot. There you go. So that's it. This gun training demo, it's how to load a pistol magazine. Now, you would think it would be easy, but many people have a very difficult time loading a magazine for a handgun. Usually, it's women or persons with weak hands. And I don't mean anything against you ladies, but that's just the case. That's what I say. Or persons who are novices at shooting in general. It's okay, though, because there is a answer for each category of person who cannot easily load a handgun magazine. There's a few different aspects as to why it is difficult, so let's go over those, then fix it. Let's figure out what the problem is, and let's figure out how to fix it. We've already touched on the weak hands and limited skills, but there are more reasons why handgun magazines can be hard to load. Number one, the magazine is brand new, and the spring in the magazine is very strong and not broken in yet. Two, the follower is of an awkward design, which makes the magazine hard to load at times. Number three, the magazine's lips, quote, in quotes, which keep the ammo from popping back out, have sharp edges or are pointy and hurt your fingers when loading. Number four, some people wish to load the ammunition into the magazine backwards, which can make it difficult to load. And I'm trying to be nice on that one. Yeah, novices, first timers, I can understand what happens. But it's very difficult to load it that way, and then if you even do get it in the gun, it's going to cause you major problems. So we'll talk about that. And then number five, improper grip on the magazine and improper use of your fingers and support hand. Now that I've listed some reasons as to why it's hard to load a handgun magazine for some people, let me explain to you how we can overcome those challenges. The first one here is the old tried and true method of breaking in a magazine spring, the magazine spring that pushes up the bullet cartridges, is to load the magazine to full capacity and to leave it loaded. The spring will learn what it has to do and how tough it has to be to make the magazine function properly and to make it easier for you to load in the future. If you have a magazine follower that is shaped funny, what you need to do is learn the easiest way to load the first round. After the first round, the rest should become easy because then the cartridge is just more level than when you're looking at the follower itself. And I'll be showing these in just a second. This, you learn that by trial and error, by the way. And then I'll tell you what, I've got the high-capacity magazine here. If you're looking in the video right now, I've got two magazines. One is a single stack, and the other is a high-capacity mag. The single stack mag, for those of you who can't see this video and have some familiarization with handguns, it's where when you go to load the magazine, you put the cartridge on the first on the follower, and then you put the other cartridge right on top of that, and right on top of that, right on top of that. It's a single stack. If you were to look at it, it'd be one on top of the other. The high-capacity mag has a slanted follower. So when you go to put the first round in, it pushes down, and then the next round will go a little bit off on an angle. It kind of zigzags back and forth in the magazine so it'll fit. And if you look at this Glock magazine, you'll see all the holes in the back. As the more cartridges are put into the magazine, they zigzag, and you'll get to see the brass or the silver from the aluminum or the steel-cased ammo poking through the holes to tell you how many rounds you have in the magazine. But they stagger back and forth. Now, in my bag here, hold on one second. Paul? You're doing a great job over there as I get my fake bullets. Here we go. I've got some dummy rounds here for 9mm, and I'm going to put them in a single-stack magazine on the video so you can see what I'm talking about. On the top of the magazine, we have what we call the magazine lips. Those lips hold the cartridge in from popping out. But the best way to put the first cartridge in and cartridges in after that is by grabbing the magazine and putting your thumb up and over the top with your tip of your thumb in line with the edge of those magazine lips. So if you're looking on the video, there's the lips. There's where they end. I'm going to put my thumb right over the edge so it's lined up. So when I go to put the cartridge in the magazine with my other hand, I use the back side of the cartridge to line directly against my thumb tip. I push straight down and then in underneath the lips, and the round is held. I do that for all the other rounds as well. Now that that round's in there, I put my thumb on top of that round, push it down a little bit for a starter, get the other cartridge and put it on top of that one, push down and in, and there you go. Now on a high cap magazine, in the video you notice how it's sloping? Well, sometimes when I was telling you about those magazines with the pointy edges, sometimes they hurt when you're putting it in there. I would just get rid of it, get a whole new gun, get a 1911, you'll be happy, trust me. But if you don't, this is what you got. You got a magazine follower that has an angle. So once again, you're going to put your thumb up over the top like I told you. But now the first one's going to, instead of it going straight down, it's kind of going to go in on a side angle, just slightly. Goes in slightly on the side, underneath your thumb, underneath the lips, and then it's in. But now it's just like the one that's a single stack. All you're going to do is put your thumb on top, and it's going to act just like the single stack did, one on top of the other. The magazine follower on the double wide one is a little weird. Once you get past that and you got the round sticking up on the top, you just put them down like a single stack mag. So that's how to load a mag. If you want to learn further, come to aaronsgunshop.com. Friday nights from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. we have special opening to the public, or you can set yourself up with a class or seminars, and we can teach you all the stuff. You become a very good and proficient shooter.